Jonas told himself again and again throughout the day. But that evening, everything changed. All of it. All the things they had thought through so meticulously fell apart. That night, Jonas was forced to flee. He left the dwelling shortly after the sky became dark and the community still. It was terribly dangerous because some of the work crews were still about. But he moved stealthily and silently, staying in the shadows, making his way past the darkened dwellings and the empty central plaza toward the river. Beyond the plaza, he could see the House of the Old, with the annex behind it, outlined against the night sky. But he could not stop there. There was no time. Every minute counted now, and every minute must take him farther from the community. Now he was on the bridge, hunched over on the bicycle, pedaling steadily. He could see the dark, churning water far below. He felt, surprisingly, no fear, nor any regret at leaving the community behind. But he felt a very deep sadness that he had left his closest friend behind. He knew that in the danger of his escape, he must be absolutely silent. But with his heart and mind, he called back and hoped that with his capacity for hearing beyond, the giver would know that Jonas had said goodbye. It had happened at the evening meal. The family unit was eating together as always. Lily chattering away, mother and father making their customary comments and lies, Jonas knew, about the day. Nearby, Gabriel played happily on the floor, babbling his baby talk, looking with glee now and then toward Jonas, obviously delighted to have him back after the unexpected night away from the dwelling. Father glanced down toward the toddler. "Enjoy it, little guy," he said. "This is your last night as visitor." "What do you mean?" Jonas asked him. Father sighed with disappointment. "Well, you know he wasn't here when you got home this morning because we had him stay overnight at the nurturing center. It seemed like a good opportunity with you gone to give it a try. He'd been sleeping so soundly." "Didn't it go well?" Mother asked sympathetically. Father gave a rueful laugh. "Ha, that's an understatement. It was a disaster. He cried all night, apparently. The night crew couldn't handle it. They were really frazzled by the time I got to work."
"Gabe, you naughty thing," Lily said,
with a scolding little cluck toward the grinning toddler on the floor. "So," Father went on, "we obviously had to make the decision. Even I voted for Gabriel's release when we had the meeting this afternoon." Jonas put down his fork and stared at his father.
"Release?"
he asked. Father nodded. "We certainly gave it our best try, didn't we?"
"Yes, we did," Mother agreed emphatically.
Lily nodded in agreement, too. Jonas worked at keeping his voice absolutely calm.
"When?"
he asked.
"When will he be released?"
"First thing tomorrow morning. We have to start our preparation for the naming ceremony, so we thought we'd get this taken care of right away."
"It's bye-bye to you, Gabe, in the morning," Father had said in his sweet, sing-song voice.
Jonas reached the opposite side of the river, stopped briefly, and looked back. The community where his entire life had been lived lay behind him now, sleeping. At dawn, the orderly, disciplined life he had always known would continue again, without him. The life where nothing was ever unexpected, or inconvenient, or unusual. The life without color, pain, or past. He pushed firmly again at the pedal with his foot and continued riding along the road. It was not safe to spend time looking back. He thought of the rules he had broken so far. Enough that if he were caught now, he would be condemned. First, he had left the dwelling at night, a major transgression. Second, he had robbed the community of food, a very serious crime, even though what he had taken was leftovers set out on the dwelling doorsteps for collection. Third, he had stolen his father's bicycle. He had hesitated for a moment, standing beside the bike port in the darkness, not wanting anything of his father's, and uncertain as well whether he could comfortably ride the larger bike when he was so accustomed to his own. But it was necessary, because it had the child seat attached to the back. And he had taken Gabriel, too. He could feel
the little head nudges back, bouncing gently against him as he rode. Gabriel was sleeping soundly, strapped into the seat. Before he had left the dwelling, he had laid his hands firmly on Gabe's back and transmitted to him the most soothing memory he could, a slow swinging hammock under palm trees on an island someplace at evening, with the rhythmic sound of languid water lapping hypnotically against a beach nearby. As the memory seeped from him into the new child, he could feel Gabe's sleep ease and deepen. There had been no stir at all when Jonas lifted him from the crib and placed him gently into the molded seat. He knew that he had the remaining hours of night before they would be aware of his escape, so he rode hard, steadily, willing himself not to tire as the minutes and miles passed. There had been no time to receive the memories he and the giver had counted on, of strength and courage, so he relied on what he had and hoped it would be enough. He circled the outlying communities, their dwellings dark. Gradually, the distances between communities widened with longer stretches of empty road. His legs ached at first. Then, as time passed, they became numb. At dawn, Gabriel began to stir. They were in an isolated place. Fields on either side of the road were dotted with thickets of trees here and there. He saw a stream and made his way to it across a rutted, bumpy meadow. Gabriel, wide awake now, giggled as the bicycle jolted him up and down. Jonas unstrapped Gabe, lifted him from the bike, and watched him investigate the grass and twigs with delight. Carefully, he hid the bicycle in thick bushes. "Morning meal, Gabe!" He unwrapped some of the food and fed them both. Then he filled the cup he had brought with water from the stream and held it for Gabriel to drink. He drank thirstily himself and sat by the stream, watching the new child play. He was exhausted. He knew he must sleep, resting his own muscles and preparing himself for more hours on the bicycle. It would not be safe to travel in daylight. They would be looking for him soon. He found a place deeply hidden in the trees, took the new child there, and lay down, holding Gabriel in his arms. Gabe struggled cheerfully as if it were a wrestling game, the kind they had played back in the dwelling, with tickles and laughter. "Sorry, Gabe," Jonas told him. "I know it's morning, and I know you just woke up. But we have to sleep now." He cuddled the small body close to him and rubbed the little back. He murmured to Gabriel soothingly. Then he pressed his hands firmly and transmitted a memory of deep, contented exhaustion. Gabriel's head nodded after a moment and fell against Jonas's chest. Together, the fugitive slept through the first dangerous day. The most terrifying thing was the plains. By now, days had passed. Jonas no longer knew how many. The journey had become automatic. The sleep by days, hidden in underbrush and trees, the finding of water, the careful division of scraps of food, augmented by what he could find in the fields, and the endless, endless miles on the bicycle by night. His leg muscles were taut now. They ached when he settled himself to sleep. But they were stronger, and he stopped now less often to rest. Sometimes he paused and lifted Gabriel down for a brief bit of exercise, running down the road or through a field together in the dark. But always, when he returned, strapped the uncomplaining toddler into the seat again and remounted, his legs were ready. So he had enough strength of his own and had not needed what the giver might have provided had there been time. But when the plains came, he wished that he could have received the courage. He knew there were search planes. They flew so low that they woke him with the noise of their engines, and sometimes, looking out and up fearfully from the hiding places, he could almost see the faces of the searchers. He knew that they could not see color, and that their flesh, as well as Gabriel's light golden curls, would be no more than smears of gray against the colorless foliage. But he remembered from his science and technology studies at school that the search planes used heat-seeking devices which could identify body warmth and would hone in on two humans huddled in shrubbery. So always, when he heard the aircraft sound, he reached to Gabriel and transmitted memories of snow, keeping some for himself. Together they became cold and when the planes were gone, they would shiver, holding each other, until sleep came again. Sometimes, urging the memories into Gabriel, Jonas felt that they were more shallow, a little weaker than they had been. It was what he had hoped and what he and the giver had planned, that as he moved away from the community, he would shed the memories and leave them behind for the people. But now, when he needed them, when the planes came, he tried hard to cling to what he still had of cold and to use it for their survival. Usually the aircraft came by day when they were hiding. But he was alert at night, too, on the road, always listening intently for the sound of the engines. Even Gabriel listened and would call out, "Plane! Plane!" sometimes before Jonas had heard the terrifying noise. When the aircraft searchers came, as they did occasionally, during the night as they rode, Jonas sped to the nearest tree or bush, dropped to the ground, and made himself and Gabriel cold. But it was sometimes a frighteningly close call. As he pedaled through the nights, through isolated landscape now, with the communities far behind and no sign of human habitation around him or ahead, he was constantly vigilant, looking for the next nearest hiding place should the sound of engines come. But the frequency of the planes diminished. They came less often and flew, when they did come, less slowly, as if the search had become haphazard and no longer hopeful. Finally, there was an entire day and night when they did not come at all. Now the landscape was changing. It was a subtle change, hard to identify at first. The road was narrower and bumpy, apparently no longer tended by road crews. It was harder suddenly to balance on the bike as the front wheel wobbled over stones and ruts. One night, Jonas fell when the bike jolted to a sudden stop against a rock. He grabbed instinctively for Gabriel, and the new child, strapped tightly in a seat, was uninjured, only frightened when the bike fell to its side. But Jonas's ankle was twisted, and his knees were scraped and raw, blood seeping through his torn trousers. Painfully, he righted himself and the bike and reassured Gabe. Tentatively, he began to ride in daylight. He had forgotten the fear of the searchers, who seemed to have diminished into the past. But now there were new fears. The unfamiliar landscape held hidden, unknown perils. Trees became more numerous, and the forests beside the road were dark and thick with mystery. They saw streams more frequently now and stopped often to drink. Jonas carefully washed his injured knees, wincing as he rubbed at the raw flesh. The constant ache of his swollen ankle was eased when he soaked it occasionally in the cold water that rushed through roadside gullies. He was newly aware that Gabriel's safety depended entirely upon his own continued strength. They saw their first waterfall, and for the first time, wildlife. "Plane! Plane!" Gabriel called, and Jonas turned swiftly into the trees, though he had not seen planes in days, and he did not hear an aircraft engine now. When he stopped the bicycle in the shrubbery and turned to grab Gabe, he saw the small, chubby arm pointing toward the sky. Terrified, he looked up. But it was not a plane at all. Though he had never seen one before, he identified it from his fading memories, for the giver had given them to him often. It was a bird. Soon there were many birds along the way, soaring overhead, calling. They saw deer, and once beside the road, looking at them, curious and unafraid, a small reddish-brown creature with a thick tail, whose name Jonas did not know. He slowed the bike, and they stared at one another until the creature turned away and disappeared into the woods. All of it was new to him. After a life of sameness and predictability, he was awed by the surprises that lay beyond each curve of the road. He slowed the bike again and again to look with wonder at wildflowers, to enjoy the throaty warble of a new bird nearby, or merely to watch the way wind shifted the leaves in the trees. During his 12 years in the community, he had never felt such simple moments of exquisite happiness. But there were desperate fears building in him now as well. The most relentless of his new fears was that they would starve. Now that they had left the cultivated fields behind them, it was almost impossible to find food. They finished the meager store of potatoes and carrots they had saved from the last agricultural area, and now they were always hungry. Jonas knelt by a stream and tried without success to catch a fish with his hands. Frustrated, he threw rocks into the water, knowing, even as he did so, that it was useless. Finally, in desperation, he fashioned a makeshift net, looping the strands of Gabriel's blanket around a curved stick. After countless tries, the net yielded two flopping silvery fish. Methodically, Jonas hacked them to pieces with a sharp rock and fed the raw shreds to himself and to Gabriel. They ate some berries and tried without success to catch a bird. At night, while Gabriel slept beside him, Jonas lay awake, tortured by hunger, and remembered his life in the community where meals were delivered to each dwelling every day. He tried to use the flagging power of his memory to recreate meals and managed brief, tantalizing fragments, banquets with huge roasted meats, birthday parties with thick frosted cakes, and lush fruits picked and eaten, sun-warmed and dripping from trees. But when the memory glimpses subsided, he was left with a gnawing, painful emptiness. Jonas remembered suddenly and grimly the time in his childhood when he had been chastised for misusing a word. The word had been starving. "You have never been starving," he had been told. "You will never be starving." Now he was. If he had stayed in the community, he would not be. It was as simple as that. Once he had yearned for choice, then, when he had had a choice, he had made the wrong one, the choice to leave. And now he was starving. But if he had stayed, his thoughts continued, if he had stayed, he would have starved in other ways. He would have lived a life hungry for feelings, for color, for love. And Gabriel. For Gabriel, there would have been no life at all. So there had not really been a choice. It became a struggle to ride the bicycle as Jonas weakened from lack of food and realized, at the same time, that he was encountering something he had for a long time yearned to see. Hills. His sprained ankle throbbed as he forced the pedal downward in an effort that was almost beyond him. And the weather was changing. It rained for 2 days. Jonas had never seen rain, though he had experienced it often in the memories. He had liked those rains, enjoyed the new feeling of it. But this was different. He and Gabriel became cold and wet, and it was hard to get dry, even when sunshine occasionally followed. Gabriel had not cried during the long, frightening journey. Now he did. He cried because he was hungry and cold and terribly weak. Jonas cried, too, for the same reasons, and another reason as well. He wept because he was afraid now that he could not save Gabriel. He no longer cared about himself. Jonas felt more and more certain that the destination lay ahead of him. Very near now in the night that was approaching. None of his senses confirmed it. He saw nothing ahead except the endless ribbon of road unfolding and twisting narrow curves. He heard no sound ahead, yet he felt it. Felt that elsewhere was not far away. But he had little hope left that he would be able to reach it. His hope diminished further when the sharp, cold air began to blur and thicken with swirling white. Gabriel, wrapped in his inadequate blanket, was hunched, shivering, and silent in his little seat. Jonas stopped the bike wearily, lifted the child down, and realized, with heartbreak, how cold and weak Gabe had become. Standing in the freezing mound that was thickening around his numb feet, Jonas opened his own tunic, held Gabriel to his bare chest, and tied the torn and dirty blanket around them both. Gabriel moved feebly against him and whimpered briefly into the silence that surrounded them. Dimly, from a nearly forgotten perception as blurred as the substance itself, Jonas recalled what the whiteness was. "It's called snow, Gabe," Jonas whispered. "Snowflakes.
They fall down from the sky, and they're very beautiful.
There was no response from the child.